In the Me Too era, companies are starting to look at a firm's history with sexual harassment before completing sales or mergers. That's in addition to the other kinds of due diligence that had happened on financial records and other issues related to the business. It's called the Weinstein Clause, after Harvey Weinstein. And with me to talk about it is Kim Spori, a partner in the Mergers and Acquisitions Group at the New York law firm Cleary Gottlieb. And Kim, what exactly is the Weinstein Clause?
So essentially, the Weinstein Clause is, I would say, at best a burgeoning trend, and it's kind of a reaction to the broader Me Too movement. I think what's essentially happened is that people in the business community and people in the M&A sphere obviously have witnessed what's been going on generally in terms of the focus on sexual harassment and various executives that have been fired and various companies that have seen their stock price drop as a result. And so what people are essentially doing now is looking at protecting themselves in the acquisition context from buying a company that might be facing sexual harassment issues.
So how do they do that? Is this just a matter of disclosure that they want to know everything? They want to know all the skeletons in the closet?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the Weinstein Clause is essentially a representation. So when you acquire a company pursuant to a merger agreement, you'll have a section of the document with representations regarding the company. And this will say things like the company's operating in compliance with law, it has all of its permits, etc. So what people are doing now is saying, you know, there haven't been any allegations of sexual harassment against executives, or, you know, no executives have entered into settlement claims in respect of sexual harassment and things like that.
So do buyers then, if there is something that they need to know, do they then evaluate maybe how severe it is, how pervasive it is, and determine if they want to continue buying the company? And if so, how they want to handle some of these issues?
Yes, that's exactly right. So the disclosure essentially gives the buyer a chance to reassess what they would like to do with respect to the acquisition more broadly. So generally speaking, you could walk away from the acquisition, you could amend your purchase price, you could lower the purchase price to take into account any potential losses that might result from the disclosure of such sexual harassment claims. You could also work with the target to remediate any such claims between signing and closing. And, you know, essentially, the reason that this is particularly important for buyers is oftentimes, or the worst case scenario really, is if a buyer is acquiring a company and they're particularly interested in an executive team, and it turns out that there might be a member of that team who's been accused of sexual harassment or something to that effect. And then essentially, as a buyer, you're in a position where a lot of the value you're attributing to the business may not be there after closing. So maybe that's the case, for example, where you have to reassess and say, do I still want to go through with this transaction? Would I go through with this transaction and maybe have this person terminated, and really kind of think through the implications of what you're seeing as a result of the disclosure?
So it sounds like what you're saying is that, at least in some respect, these concerns are about the specific people who are maybe coming over in the sale, as opposed to the overall maybe company or brand or that kind of thing itself.
Well, I think it's both. It's definitely the executive team is obviously a key part of most acquisitions, but it's often also the brand. And it's also thinking about if this is a broader, more pervasive issue at a company.
In the world of mergers and acquisitions, have you seen that there are a lot of companies that are having to disclose things like this now that maybe wouldn't have had to in the past?
As I said, I don't really think that this is a full... It's a burgeoning trend, but I wouldn't say it's a full-fledged trend. So it's certainly something people are more interested in. I think it's something people are much more interested in the diligence process. But it's not something that's coming up necessarily in every single transaction.
And is it safe to say that even if there is this clause in place, that doesn't necessarily insulate the buyer from any potential problems at the company that they're buying? Because claims could come out, in theory, after the sale goes through, right?
Yes, that's absolutely right. And I think that's why on our end, what we really try to drive home to our clients is that the most important thing you can do in this sort of process is conduct an extensive due diligence process, because it's really that due diligence process that's going to enable you to kind of uncover any skeletons in the closet. And you're absolutely right. The company may not even know about some of these allegations. Obviously, the vast majority of sexual harassment goes unreported. So I think it's kind of on the buyer to do the due diligence and not just depend on the representation in the agreement. And I think the way that you can do this is to kind of see how sexual harassment is reported at a company generally. So for example, how involved is the board? Does the board get reports on sexual harassment on an annual basis? Do they know what the policy is? Is the policy industry best standard, or has it fallen short? Is it outdated? So I think kind of doing that diligence will at least give you a sense of how seriously the target is taking sexual harassment.
Are you tending to see this happen more at certain types of companies or certain size companies that are looking to find this stuff out before they go through it with a sale?
We've seen certain acquirers that are more sensitive depending on their industry. So acquirers in the tech industry, acquirers in the entertainment industry, because those particular fields have been so hard hit in this movement, I think they in particular are very careful when they're looking at targets to invest in.
Kim Sporey is a partner in the Mergers and Acquisitions Group at the New York law firm Cleary Gottlieb.